thank you all for asking me to come up here and speak tonight. I was contemplating all week, well, what are you going to talk about? You know, well, I've spoke before, and all I can do is tell you my story, where I come from, and a little bit about what happened, and, you know, what it's like now. And a lot of you are from around Culpeper that know me. You know, I was born and raised here in Culpeper, and I never set out to become an alcoholic. That wasn't my lifelong dream, but ended up an alcoholic. But, as many of us do, I started drinking at an early age in high school, and had a lot of fun. You know, I had fun when I first started drinking. Running around town and having a good time and all. And when I was 21, I met my wife, and we didn't have a big selection of ladies around town, and I had a reputation, so we had a horse show place show up out here in Culpeper, and that's where I met my wife at. She's from the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Well, anyway, her and I started dating and got married in 1984, January 6th, and August 13th, if you can figure all that out, we had our first daughter. And, that's when alcohol started becoming more of a problem in my life. My wife started taking on responsibilities, and that's one thing I didn't want was responsibility. And, was being a father, I would work my butt off and 6 days a week and just couldn't figure out how in the world you're supposed to make it on that. And, but I wasn't taking none of this and my actions in consideration. And I'll get on through, I have four daughters, and they ask me the exact dates and years, I can't tell you. I know my last daughter, which is 7 now, I have them from 27 to 7. She was born and I was sober at the time. And she's the only one of my kids that was. I got one that's 21 that seen the real tail end of my drinking career, and it wasn't pretty. And to this day, I think it had an effect on their lives. Well, I know it did. Just talking with them at their age, they're a whole lot more responsible than their daddy was. And I think that's a I want to take some credit for that, but I think it's not credit you would call it. It would be more, I don't want to be like daddy. after taking the first drink, I was the type of drunk, I always thought I was a happy drunk, but after taking the first drink, I really never knew where I'd end up or what would happen. And it just got progressively worse. I've done a lot of things in my drunken story that I'm not proud of, and how I still have a wife, I do not know. But she's hung in there with me, and she was a strong one. When I'd get drunk, she knew how to handle me. And a lot of you know her now. She can set me straight, but she's had a little experience behind her. But anyways, getting on to a drunk log is a drunk log, and everybody has their own. I got in this program July 9th, 1996. I started drinking on July 3rd, and where I was, what happened in 6 days, I don't know. All I know is I woke up on the living room floor. It was a Tuesday morning. I told my wife, she said, she was evidently asked me, you know, where I'd been. I said, well, I don't know, but I think I'm getting the flu. And she says, you sick, you SOB. And that was the first time I ever cried out for help, really. You know, the judges had sent me here back in 85, and I'd come in around the rooms, and I heard seen some old guys, you know, and they would sit there and say, well, the first drink's going to get you drunk. And I said, shit. You know, I was drinking a fifth a day. For one, the first drink's not going to get me drunk. Them guys just don't know how to drink. And, but anyways, I don't know what corresponded after that. All I remember is we were headed over the mountain to New Hope. And I told her, I got up here about Ruckersville, and I said, you want to pull over? I got to get one, you know. And she says, well, I ain't going to the liquor store. She says, you can get your beer. But so she pulled over, and I got a, told her I was going one, you know. You come out with six tall boys. And anyway, I drank what I could going over the mountain, and I got over there in New Hope, and it was the first time that I'd been that long since I was early teenager without a drink or a drug. And I got to looking at where, you know, where I was at in my life. At the time, I was 37 years old. I had three kids, a wife, a house, and, you know, look where I'm at, you know. I'm sitting over here, and I done been to jails. And alcohol had took me to jails from Fairfax to Orange County, but I never could relate that to the alcohol. It was always bad luck. Matter of fact, I spoke to a prosecuting attorney the Friday that helped me all he could twice. Finally, he said, Steve, he says, I can't help you anymore. He says, you know, you're going to have to do some time. And I said, well, okay, you know, can I do it on the weekend? And he said, well, I'll see what I can do. But anyway, I went on and did what I had to do. And it's just a string of bad luck, you know. When I got out on the road, they were always looking for me. And, you know, it's either that tail light out or this or that, but I never could attribute it was my responsibility, that I was the one that was the problem. But after coming out of New Hope, I got in this 28 Brave program down here, Boxwood, and I said, well, you know, this is a good program that can teach me how to drink again, you know, where I could come in, you know, I could get off on a Friday afternoon and go on home and have a beer or two. Well, little did I know when I, you know, after sitting around there for a while, that I found out that, you know, the first drink does get me drunk. And what happens after that, I have no control because I'm an alcoholic. And my father, we had no alcoholics in the family. I have an older brother that he could drink and go on home and never faze him. And my father, I never seen him drink, maybe a beer or two, but, you know, he retired from the Air Force, retired from the government, and, you know, he would come over, and as I'd be in a drunken stupor, and just tell me, you know, son, it ain't nothing but willpower. That's all it is, just willpower, you know. Just put a plug in that jug. And I just, you know, and I tried that many, many, many times. If I could just quit, I could quit maybe 2 days, 3 days a week, but I couldn't stay quit, you know, and then I'd have to play catch up, you know. I was just really dry. But I went through Boxwood, and you know, I was introduced to this book right here. Well, not this edition, but the third edition, I guess. So, and started reading that, and, you know, I could relate to a lot of this stuff in here, these stories that these guys were talking about and all. And they says, you know, when you get out of here, I was in a, that was a nice confined area, and, you know, I felt comfortable there because everybody in there had one goal. And when I got out of there, I didn't know, actually, I was scared as hell. Because I says, you know, I'm just going to end up right back where I was. And, you know, the next time, my buddy down here in Prince William County then told me, he said, you know, Steve, if we catch you again, you got big time. You know, you're looking at 10 years. And I said, well, you know, I just don't know what to do. But I got out of there, and I come home, and I didn't work for a couple of days. And I mean, I just walked around the house and just didn't know what to do. You know, I was in the heating and cooling business, and I was traveling to Manassas, and that just, I was at wit's end, really. But anyway, Bummy had called me up, you know, and then, and it said that I'd heard, you know, I did duck work and stuff like this. And anyway, he come by and picked me up, and he said, well, I don't think I know you. And I said, well, I met you the other night out here at Boxwood. He said, oh, are you in the program? I said, well, I don't know if I'm in the program. I just got out to Boxwood. But I think him and his son and I knew each other really well. So we ended up going out there, putting a unit in backwards and putting duck work and all that in. But looking back on, you know, it's God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. It was, I started my own little deal here in Culpeper, and, you know, it just took off by word of mouth, and I still do a little work. Very rarely now, because I'm not capable, but anyway, I in 1996, that's when I started my own little business here in Culpeper, and it grown, and I've done well at it, you know. And I got to say that meetings is the one thing that helped me out. I mean, I make a meeting. When I got out of Boxwood, I made a meeting 7 days a week, and today I still make 4 or 5 meetings a week, and it's all because that's the way I was taught when I got here. And, you know, I've been around here for about a year, I guess, a year and a half, and I was told, you need to get a sponsor. We keep reading these steps, and God was throwing these things at me. You need a sponsor. And so finally, I come across an old guy down here at Rapidan, and he was 68, I guess, at the time, maybe a little older. And my wife, I could relate to him, you know, and he's passed away now, Doc. But his sponsor was Bill Jay, and Doc and I hit it off, and so I asked him to be my sponsor. Let's go through these steps, you know, what is it about it? And old Doc was a caring man, and, you know, we went through the steps, and the biggest thing, you know, is he emphasizes the fifth step. We need to get through your fourth and fifth step and unload all this baggage that you're carrying around, so that you can progress on with life. And it's just funny, on the way over here, I come this back way over, and there was this lady walking down the road. She had this big rock in her hand, just half an hour ago. And I thought to myself, you know, that's God telling me something like that. This lady needs to drop this rock and go get a wagon or something to pull this thing, or get somebody to help her, you know. And that's what I was told, you know, that come in these rooms and share with other alcoholics, and you can drop that rock, and you ain't got to carry that load, you know. You don't feel like that you're the only one that's, you know, that's bearing these things in your life. And I did, you know. And Doc and I, we would take our little escapades down to, he loved offshore fish, but he wasn't, like I say, he was about 68, 70 years old. So I made one trip with him down there driving, and I think we got to Gordonsville, and I told him, you're going to have to pull over, Jack, if you want me to ride with you. I'll drive, you ride. Because I got over there, and I was smoking, and I mean, I done smoked a pack of cigarettes. I said, shoo. And from then on, I was driving. I'd give him to Orange, and we would get ice and stuff, and then I'd take over from Orange and take his own end, because I wasn't my back to go around Richmond and Hampton with him. And but anyway, we'd go down to for two or three day event, and we would always schedule AA meetings before we got there. You know, we knew where they were. We become we met a lot of people down there, and that showed me that I could have fun without drinking or drugging in my life. You know, that you didn't need that stuff, and that was a blessing, really. You know, because I'd gotten sober and I went through the steps, but I still didn't know, you know, here I was, a fairly young man, what are you going to do for fun, you know? You know, I enjoy doing things, and I kept thinking, well, ain't a lot of people out here doing things that I like to do, but come to find out there is, and it all come from meeting somebody around the rooms, but you know, I just didn't grab the first person I'd run across either, because a lot of them, I've met a lot of people in the program that's sober, that I don't want what they have, and you know, and I'm sure there's a lot around the rooms that don't want what I have, but that's okay too, you know, that's on in the steps too, you know, to love one another no matter what, but progressing on down the road, Doc. Well, my dad, he'd retired and he'd come to work with me, and then he says, "Well, hell, Steve," he says, "I'm, you know, I didn't retire twice. I ain't cut out for this anymore." So he up and they went to Florida and built a house down there for a while, and they wasn't down there for about 5 years, found out that, you know, Florida wasn't what he always thought it was. And so he ended up coming back up here to Culpeper. But, you know, this program made me and him closer than we ever have been in our lives. But he, I guess it was 7 years ago. Yeah, 2005, he'd come down with pancreatic cancer, and never drank or smoked or anything, but anyway, we did what we could do to see what we could, you know, that's a deadly disease, and we were all over, and I took a lot of my time, and we went to different hospitals, Georgetown, Johns Hopkins, all over, but anyway, it gave me a lot of time to sit down and talk with him, you know, because he'd be sitting there taking a treatment or something other, and we would talk. And this part in the book, you know, it talks about having faith in God and all. And I was raised in a church, a Pentecostal church, you know, and I always thought that God was you know, you were going to hell if you smoked, drank, or cussed. And having faith in something you couldn't see is another thing that I couldn't really relate with. You know, but after setting up here, I'll never forget it. We was up at Johns Hopkins, my dad and I, and my mom, they'd come home, and we had a townhouse right up there, right down from the hospital. And I said, "Well, I'm going on over to the townhouse to go to sleep. I'll be back in a few hours." And he said, "Well, you know, I'm ready to go." He said, I said, "Well, go. Where you ready to go to? You ain't going nowhere." And he said, "No." Nah. He says, "You know, that he was right with God. He was ready for God to come and take him." And I said, "Well, that was hard for me to swallow at the time, but." I went on up there and I took about a 4-hour nap, I guess, come back. And, you know, I looked at him, I said, well, Dad, if you accept that, I guess I got to, you know, I can. And that was my awakening right there, that, you know, that faith will get us through anything. And even though that I knew there was a God, and, you know, I would pray them foxhole prayers, many of them, and I had people pray for me. I had grandmothers, my wife and I, we wasn't married at the time, but we rented a little house right across the street from her. She'd come out on the porch every morning, I'm praying for y'all. I said, well, thank you, Nanny. I need all the prayers I can get. But, you know, here it comes 15 years later, and those prayers was coming true, and I could see how they had really affected my dad, and he could accept God and faith, and that was my spiritual awakening, you know, and it's all because of this program, you know. And I talked to my sponsor since then. Doc had passed away, and I would talk to Bill, I'd talk to anybody who would listen, because I really hadn't dealt with a death that close to me before, and I didn't know what to do. You know, my mother, she was all upset, and I had two siblings, they had a brother and a sister, and they didn't know anything, and they all got back up there that, I think it was like a Thursday, and I had to come back home because they had work to do. But I told them, I said, everything's going to be all right. I said, Pops is, he's ready to go, you know, and if he's ready, if he can accept it, I guess we're going to have to, too. And wasn't long after that, he passed away. Well, actually, it was 6 months to the day when they diagnosed him. He died on his birthday. And, you know, this program, it was a Thursday, because I opened a Thursday night meeting. And I was up in his room, and I told him, well, I'm going down to open the meeting, but I'll be back up later. And I did. I went down, opened the meeting, and I got back up there about 10, I guess, and about 11:30, he passed away. But, you know, my brother and sister and mother, if it wasn't for this program and me knowing, having a faith, gaining a faith through this program and the people in it, it would have been nuts, you know. Everything was thrown on, well, I felt like everything was thrown on my shoulders to make arrangements to comfort mother. And, you know, I had a brother that he doesn't speak up about anything. You know, he just shakes his head. And a sister, she wants to run the show, but she don't know what she wants to do. But anyway, all that is just life. And I can deal with that today. And it's all because of this program. So one, you know, after my dad passed away, 5 years later, my mother, she passed away. And, you know, that helped me handle that situation, something terrible, you know. And I can remember old Bill Johnson tell me right out there the night the dad passed away, I guess it was, you know, dying is all part of living, Steve. And, you know, I never looked at it like that, but today I realize that is, you know, God just knows what's going on in our life from the time we hit the ground to the time we go away from here. But moving on, you know, my mother passed away, and we, the same siblings, you know, my brother just shaking his head, my sister, she hasn't been down here in a year and a half, and she comes down from Rhode Island, and she's going to run the show, and this and that, and whatever. And I never missed a meeting, though. You know, that's, if it wasn't for the meetings, I would have been just as nutty as they was. But, and it's made us closer. It's one of the biggest resentments I've gotten was with my sister over that situation. But through this, I've been able to call her and tell her, you know, that, hey, look, I'm not saying I was wrong or you were right. It's just one of those things that happened at the time, and today I'm a better person than that, and, you know, if I hurt you in any way, please forgive me. And so we moved on, you know, that's life. And here back in, it's funny how God tries us, you know, and I've sponsored people, and I'm bad, what do they say, I'm bad in a thousand, because I don't see any of them sitting in here. But one thing about it, they have kept me sober. And I've had some doozies. One poor fella, you know, and I pray for him when I do pray for him, you know, that he does get his life together. But back in 2009, you know, I have liver problems, and it was right before this big snowstorm, and I come home and I just was just chilled. And anyway, I had a vein bust going into my liver, and they had to fly me up here to Charlottesville, and just wasn't my time to go, you know. The doctor looked at me and said, 65% of these people that have this problem don't make it. He said, why are you here? We don't know. Because they worked on me for over a couple of years and put 31 bands in here on this vein that I got running into my liver, and I was looking pretty good. I was feeling good, and I had a doctor from Columbia, South Carolina, and I told him, you know, I was right up front with him from the get-go that I was an alcoholic, and, you know, that things that I've done in my life, and this, you know, I had cirrhosis is what caused this, and this guy really worked with me, and one of the only doctors I've ever had say a prayer with me, you know. And he said, we're going to get you through this, you know, that between God and, you know, what modern medicine, we'll get you through this. And they got me right to the point where, you know, I had to go get a CAT scan done for a liver transplant, and they found out I had lymphoma cancer. So all of this past year, I was taking chemo treatments for lymphoma cancer. And December 28th of this past year, it came up, you know, that it's in remission. And, you know, the doctor says, I don't know. Originally, it was June the 9th. My wife's birthday is June 10th when they told me that, you know, they didn't think that my liver could handle this chemo. And I said, well, it's... And I told Lisa on the way up there, I said, look, if it works, comes out to where they just want me to sit up in the hospital and, you know, they're on trial and error on me, I'm not for that. I said, you know, I'd just rather go on home and let it be what it be. But they told me that, and the doctor come in and says, Steve, says, I don't think your liver will handle it. He says, I don't know. I says, well, I tell you what, we're not going to make a decision today. I says, my wife's family's from the Eastern Shore, and we took off and took a young one and went to the beach and took her over and watched these ponies swim across the Chicotee over there and swatted mosquitoes big enough to carry you away. Anyway, we come back and come back on a Monday and called a doctor. He said, I think we have something that might work for you. He said, we can drop one of these drugs out of there. He said, well, I didn't look at your case. And he said, about seven of us been reviewed it. And he said, I think this setup that we have here will work for you. And if you're willing, you know, you can drive up here each day. If we find out you can't take it, then we can just stop it. And I said, well, that's fine. I'm open to that. And so, you know, I started taking that chemo and praying you know, and there's people in the fellowship that heard, you know, what was going on, and a lot of you are here that, you know, that showed up to my house and prayed with me, and, you know, more willing to do anything that I need, and still to this day, they call, you know, what do you need? And just amazed my wife that, you know, here it was 18 years ago, the only phone calls that I would get would be from the law or the county or, you know, she would get a call in the middle of the night, how about come and get me out of jail? And she was just amazed at the number of people that's calling, and still am, and, you know, and she says, you know, this is a, she said, we were talking the other day, and I said, you know what it is, it's a love, you know, and we speak of God, she knows, she's read the book just as well as I read it. I said, it tells us that, you know, we need to find God, and I said, God is love, that's what it is. And I read all the books, the Bible and other books, and, you know, God is love, and I said, this is, it's love that these guys have, and ladies too, that we have for one another, that, you know, we're at a point in our lives where we care about somebody else more than our self-centered self. And she's amazed, and, you know, she's more willing to accommodate anybody that comes out, and it's and I think it's had a big mark on my recovery too, as far as the cancer goes. And, you know, I'd be going up the road, and Matt would call in the morning. You know, I'd be, because I try to get the early appointments, and, you know, just hanging out, man. You know, you're my prayers, or you know, not a day goes by today that I don't talk to somebody in the program. And usually it's two or three people. And some of them are sober for a good while, and others are just coming around the rooms. But I have found out, you know, it makes no difference if you get 32 hours or 32 years. We can be just as nutty as we ever was if we don't talk to another alcoholic. And, and understands where we're coming from. You know, I can walk down the street and grab a fellow. I said, man, you just don't realize how I feel right now, you know. I would be getting a phone call. They'd be taking me over the mountain again in a straitjacket. That, you know, that I can really just shake the shit out of you. But today, I don't have to do that. I have all the alternatives, you know. I can make phone calls and receive phone calls, and I understand that. I know for myself, when I call someone, it does them just as much as it does me just as much as it does them, you know. And I have a guy over in Warrington that's my sponsor now that I talk to on a daily basis, and just a old country boy, got a little farm over there, and he's just easy going, you know, and he was quick to tell me, you know, God's love, Steve. And he says, you know, I love you, brother. I love you. And then, you know, I see him, we give each other a big old hug, and people might say, well, look at these guys. Because that's a little more, today is a little more prevalent than it was back then, but, and his wife, they've been over to the house, and my youngest daughter, Gracie, she asked me tonight, she said, Dad, where are you going? I said, I'm going to a meeting. And she has Down syndrome, so, you know, she asked, well, where's the meeting at, you know? And so I told her it's in Madison, and who's going to be there, you know? Just 50 million questions. And God bless her, you know. He's been a gift to me and my wife, and it's all because of me being sober, and that I can experience those things, because some of my older ones, my oldest daughter, there's things, I can look at pictures from birthday parties and all that I don't even remember being there. Physically I'm there, but I don't remember being there. Because I'm the one that's cooking with the beer in his hand. So I know it was there, but it's right on down the line. But today I can say, you know, I've been there for this one, and she's a blessing. And God give me opportunities and give me a couple chances at life, and it's given me a chance to be a part of a child's life that, you know, I may not have ever experienced if I didn't get sober. And yesterday we were at a Special Olympics thing, and it's just the joy in my heart to see these little kids, just all of them just laughing and having fun, and, you know, it was something. It was something. Little things like that I would never thought would faze me. But today, you know, I take nothing for granted. Because I know that my time and all our time here on earth is limited, and I try to live each day to the fullest. And it's all because of this program and the people in it, being introduced to this program and the people in it, and living these principles in my life, trying to practice these principles in my life. You know, I'm not perfect by any way, and I don't know anybody that is perfect out here. A lot of them think they are, but there's all I can do is do the best I can, you know, and keep getting up. And there are a few times when, you know, I have to be pointed in the right direction, you know, and usually if I'm finding myself straying away, it's because I quit praying, or it's a self-centered prayer, things like that, you know. And I'm losing my train of thought. That's one thing that I have lost is with. Now I think that's got something to do with my disease, but my age too. I was reading the other night in a book, you know, that my prayers need to be more sincere, and they have to be for others, and, you know, and we're told that in the program. But not only good things, but we want, you know, for all the people to know that the God is a loving God and not a damning God. And, you know, be quick to tell them that, look what he's done in my life, and he can do this for you. And there are times that, you know, I didn't carry the message, you know. I was just looking here, carrying the message. Out there that whether they're alcoholic or not, I can't say. There's a lot of them that meet some criteria, but if they don't think they have a problem, I can't really help them. All I can just say, you know, this is what happened to me, and if you don't think you're one, just keep drinking, you'll find out. And that's what it took for me. I had plenty of people tell me, you know, man, you know, you're all right, Steve, until about 2 hours later, and then, you know, it's either you got a wooden leg where it's just empty, or six beers, and you just were picking you up off the floor. And that's what my wife, she could never understand. She said, one day, you know, you could just drink, just be as happy. The next day you come in and drink two beers, and then you just want to get mean as hell. And, but that's what alcohol does to me, and all the people have to live their own lives and their own journeys to figure that out. And out here at the New Birth Group, now we get a lot of new people coming through there, a lot of new people. I was talking to a young fellow there next to me the other night, not this past Thursday, but the Thursday before. I kept looking at him as I was telling him, you know, what happened in my life. Come to find out, I knew this kid when he was, you know, just tall. I said, well, you know, all I can tell you is keep getting up. You know, you'll get there. If you want to make it, you'll get there. And I said, a lot of them come in and they're just there to get the paper signed, and that's fine too. You know, that's opening the door, maybe planting a seed. You know, that one day down the line, they do know that there is a place they can go. And I think God put that seed in my life back in 1985, but it took, you know, another 11 years for me to figure out that I was the problem, not everybody else. But again, thanks for asking me to come up here and speak. And, you know, if we do anything, let's pray for those that are still sick and suffering in this world. Thank y'all.
Thank you.